The following recording was made on February 25th, 2016, at Tyler's Tap Room. It is the story of Todd Melby, the CFO and COO of Precision Biosciences, Inc.
Just want to share a little bit about myself, some of my background, kind of where I've come from, and honestly, I'd be a little vulnerable about myself. Things are good, things are bad, things I've seen about myself over the years and how those things have shaped me and how I've changed through kind of life and experience of Precision Biosciences, which has been, like Ian said, it's been a wild ride. I've lived here in Durham for the last, about 9 years. I live in North Durham. I've got a wonderful, wonderful wife. Leslie, we've been married going on 7 years. She's woefully outnumbered in my house. I have three boys under the age of five, and we have two dogs. So my wife essentially lives with six dogs, is kind of the way I look at it. Or six boys, whatever you want to say. I was trying to think of what it's like to live in that, you know, with three boys under five. And has anybody seen the Lego movie? I mean, anybody? If you haven't seen the Lego movie, the spoiler alert, it's all about this guy. The character's name is Lord Business, and he is set on making sure everything he builds with Legos stays the way he builds it. And he's running around with crazy glue, trying to glue everything together so it doesn't change. And meanwhile, there's a whole cast of characters are running around rearranging everything into crazy stuff. And that's essentially what my house is like. I am Lord Business with crazy glue, trying to put everything back together in my house as my boys run around crazy. So, but I also say that as kind of an analogy for what I was talking about today, of just the idea of control. In so much of my life growing up, and some of the older folks probably already learned this lesson, but I've, you know, for years worked on controlling things, making things go exactly the way I want, fitting them in where I need to go, taking kind of the blocks of life and building a nice kind of life out of that, and realize over the years that it's really an illusion that I can control all of that. So I wanted to speak to that. I am the Chief Operating Officer for Precision Biosciences. I've been there for about 9 years. Precision Biosciences is a genome editing company that is dedicated to solving and proving critical problems in oncology, genetic disease, as well as agriculture. And so we're not just looking to treat problems, we're looking to solve problems with our genome editing platform. And the name of the platform is ARCUS. It's a play on some combination of Latin words for flexibility as well as precision, hence the name Precision Biosciences. So that's a quick synopsis of what Precision Biosciences is. But to give you a little bit more background on myself, I grew up in Akron, Ohio. I've got two younger sisters. I've got two wonderful parents. I've been married for 42 years. I wanted to highlight a little bit about my dad, because I feel like a lot of men, your father has a great effect on kind of who you are as a person. My dad was an orthopedic surgeon. So he fixed people. That's kind of the way he went about life, and he was very good at it. Worked very hard at it. He's a very driven man. I remember early in life him being very busy, trying to get his practice up and going and making a name for himself. He's an introvert, so he's kind of a strong, silent type. He worked as hard as he could, providing for our family and making a good business. And I over years I saw that kind of weight of the world sort of stressing him out as he continued to try to build all of these things and make them work for himself. And so that was kind of things I've seen about my dad over the years. But I think the best thing that kind of characterized him for me is when I was a kid, I was 8 years old, I got attacked by a hawk. And I was walking in from dinner, we'd eaten dinner outside, and I was carrying in plates, and a hawk came down and attacked the plates of food that I was carrying in. It knocked them all out, got scars on my legs from the thing. I've never seen my dad more irate. And it was like, Arnold Schwarzenegger was really popular at that time. So my dad goes inside, gets his compound bow, throws a piece of bread out in the yard, and this hawk is about 30 feet away. He pulls his compound bow back, shoots it, hits the hawk straight in the chest, it goes out the other side, the thing wobbles around in the yard, falls over dead. My dad was amazing from that day forward. I mean, like, invincible. I was like, that guy just killed, wow! So, that was kind of the impression I had of my dad for a lot of years. So, so I took a lot of cues from my dad. I'm kind of trying to figure out what is success in life. And from him, he taught me a lot about integrity of character, how important that was, working hard, kind of that Protestant Midwest work ethic sort of thing. You work hard, you're going to get the things that you deserve because you've worked hard at it. And so that was sort of my thinking on life of how to achieve success, to sort of look for those building blocks, those Legos to put together, to kind of put together that life that's going to be successful for you. So for me, early on, it was working hard in school, doing well in that, playing sports. I played football and wrestling. I even went on to play college football. Yes, I was really small in college. I also kind of imagined just kind of going on in life, you know, finding the wife, getting the kids, getting the house, doing all that kind of stuff. A lot of the stuff that my parents had, just sort of kind of continuing down that path, that would be success. It's kind of the way I looked at it. From my mom, I think one big thing that she contributed for me, because my dad wasn't a religious man, so I thought, all right, I'll get a dash of religion in here. So I kind of got that religion Lego and put that on, and that was going to be sort of the, I kind of looked at God as sort of a genie in a bottle sort of thing. You rub the bottle, he comes out, you say, hey, I need this, and he gives it to you, and I kind of go on my merry way. So that was me kind of putting my life together. So so if I had to summarize myself of who I was sort of coming out of that, was I was a firstborn, A-type, people-pleasing, rule-following, moral kid who loved to play sports, worked hard at school, tried to make his parents proud. It kind of made me a judgmental and prideful person. And like all kids, struggling with popularity and people's opinions of myself and always asking the question, am I good enough? That question popped up a lot for me. Am I good enough? So I was always trying to do that. So for me, life was walking down a very straight and narrow line of trying to do the right thing. And so I took that on into college, where I went to college at a school called Rose-Hulman Institute of Technology. I got a mechanical engineering degree there. Like I said, played football there. I was also in a fraternity where I got the morality award twice. I know that probably seems like a little bar to get over, getting a morality award in the fraternity, but that was something I could kind of hang my hat on in life. So from there, about junior year, I realized I didn't want to be an engineer. So what do you do when you don't want to know what you want to do? You become a consultant. So I went into consulting out of school. I worked for Anderson Consulting, which then became Accenture. And I did supply chain consulting for a number of years there. And really enjoyed it, excelled at it. Instead of doing big systems implementations, I got to work on smaller teams, helping companies figure out how to just make their products better. And at the same time, I have to say I loved consulting, especially early on, for all the perks. I mean, I was 23 years old and I had limos coming up to my house to take me to the airport to fly me to where I was going. It was ridiculous. My parents were like, you're doing what? I enjoyed all the nice dinners out, all the travel that came along with it. So I really, from a career perspective, I was kind of getting accustomed to the money and the luxuries and that sort of thing. And so that was sort of adding that block on, if you will, to my life. But a couple years into that, I didn't think that consulting was going to be a long-term career for me, so I kind of opened up my religion box and asked God what he wanted me to do, and ended up applying to business school. And so I got into Kellogg at Northwestern University, and started going to school there. And a month into starting school there, a friend of mine who was going to Fuqua at Duke called me up and told me he was starting a biotech company. I thought, well, awesome. I went to business school to find a biotech, and here's a biotech. So that was actually the start of Precision Biosciences. In 2005 was an idea, actually came about from a kid's birthday party. One of the scientists and another founder got together. Neither of them had kids. I can't remember why they were at the birthday party. But they started chatting, and five people got together to found Precision Biosciences in January 2006. And so we just had our 10-year anniversary last month. I don't know how we made it 10 years, but we did. But while I was at Kellogg, I did a lot of project work for Precision. I was even Precision's first intern, which, there were three people at the time, so it wasn't a big deal. But I finished up there at Kellogg. And while I was at Kellogg, I I kind of look back on it now. This is an interesting exercise to go through, kind of looking back at your life and what you've learned from it. And looking back, I saw that where I had left high school, kind of on that really straight and narrow, Kellogg, I was kind of doing this. And just living it up, having a great time, enjoying life as much as I thought, kind of being influenced by a lot of the things of the world. And I had two significant things happen to me. One was a mentor of mine basically told me that I was a hypocrite. He said, he's like, you say, you know, you're a Christian, which that's what I said I was, but you live this way, they don't jive. And that hurt a lot for somebody who had to work on integrity being kind of a focal point of who I was. The second thing that happened to me was my dad had a stroke halfway through my second year at Kellogg that nearly killed him. My mom discovered him in our basement hours after the stroke had hit him, struggling to try to move. And he was rushed to the hospital and he was in ICU for weeks. And that was something that was a very difficult thing for me to handle, especially with that image of an invincible man as my dad just being crushed. And so I kind of looked at my life and I was seeing these blocks that I'd been putting on just falling off. And so it was a difficult time for me kind of figuring that out. But at the same time, I had the opportunity to come down here. So in 2007, I moved down here and started working as the VP of Operations for Precision. Then I promoted myself to COO, and then I promoted myself to COO and CFO. You can do that when you're a small company. You just give yourself whatever title you want. And now we settled on Chief Operating Officer for now. But I moved down here and was really excited the opportunity to start at a biotech startup. I mean, there were a few things that was as sexy as going to a biotech startup, especially when I saw the economy just get all of my friends that went into banking and consulting laid off. And so I came down here and we started the company with $750,000 loan from a group of angel investors. And that was enough money for us to out-license some IP from Duke and get the ball rolling. And so we got some lab space out in RTP I was doing everything. There were days I was up in the drop ceiling trying to put buckets in a certain place to catch the water that was coming through the ceiling, and as well as moving equipment, as well as sitting down and figuring out how are we going to conquer the world with our genome editing technology. And so it was a lot of fun. It was exciting stuff. Going into that, I came down here wanting to sort of, have, it was a sexy company, but my role wasn't the sexiest of roles. For the longest time, I know our scientists had a difficult time understanding why I was there. They were like, Todd just makes us do timesheets, or, at least he got me paid, and that kind of stuff. I actually had 4 years into my time at Precision, and one of our scientists sat down with me. He said, for the longest time, I did not know why you were here. But now I do, and I'm thankful for that. And I was like, awesome, it only took 4 years for some to appreciate me being here. We had another scientist's wife, she said, what does Todd do? And the scientist thought about it for a second, and he said, Todd does everything nobody else wants to do. I struggle to think of a less desirable way to describe your job than doing everything nobody else wants to do. But that was kind of how people viewed me. So I kind of struggled with that. That was a hit to my pride of not, of just kind of looking at sort of, baggage for the company. But as we went through that, in 2008, we closed our first deal with DuPont Pioneer Hybrid. We were doing agriculture work at the time. It's easy to work in plants really quick as opposed to working in humans. So we started working with ag companies, trying to help them make products better, more drought tolerant or pest resistant, things like that. That was a big focus of the business. We were also doing grants, and that was sort of source of funding for us. But we were able to pay back the loan that we had taken early with interest, and we were generating revenue as a biotech company, which is kind of hard to believe. And shortly after that, I remember our CEO, Matt, coming into my office and telling me that we were being sued for patent infringement. And I remember the first thought that hit me in the head, I'm embarrassed to even say this was my first thought, but my first thought was, I'm not going to be rich. That was what I thought. And that was very eye-opening to me about how what I was being driven by in my pursuit of working at Precision. And so, so we had gotten sued. And I thought it was all over, but you know, we re-rallied, we decided to fight it. So we got sued in 2008, got sued in 2010, we got sued in 2011. So we had three patent infringement lawsuits against us, put on us by a company that was a publicly traded company in Europe, had 250 employees, far more assets than we did. They were much larger. We were like, how are we gonna get through this? But we scrimped and scraped and fought. We learned how to make every dollar stretch as far as we could. One thing I think we did really well is, and we want to continue doing well, is we treated our employees very well. We gave them a lot of autonomy. We were very generous with the benefits that we could provide. And people just love working at Precision. It's not just a job, kind of like an arm's length relationship with your coworkers, but it is a community that's on mission for doing something great. And that was something that people could rally behind. And that made such a big difference, because over the years of, you know, at times not knowing if we're going to be able to make payroll, some of us not taking paychecks for a couple months, not paying ourselves market salaries, and just barely getting by. It's great when you have people that really rally around the mission, to the point where there was one of the times I thought we were going out of business. We didn't even have enough money to file bankruptcy, is how poor we were. And I had to furlough everybody in our company. So there were about 12 of us at the time. I came in one morning, I said, look, we have no expectation of being able to pay people anymore. I have to furlough all of you, which is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. The next day, everybody came back into work. And I thought to myself, what company could you work at where you tell people you're not gonna be able to pay them anymore and they still come back in to continue doing what they're doing? So that really spoke volumes to me about us. We've been working to build a really good thing. So all that being said, through that time period, I was really questioning my reason for being at Precision. Is this the right place for me? Should I continue doing this? I mean, because it was hard. You know, I started with being a bachelor, got married, started having kids, had a house. You add on all those things and responsibilities, and you start to try to figure out, can I keep this going? So I really questioned my ability to kind of continue to control, to add things onto my life and build this life that I wanted to build. So. About that same time, or throughout this period of time, my wife encouraged me to go to the Summit Church. So we started going to church, and the pastor there was a very engaging and dynamic speaker, and really challenged me a lot on what I thought the purpose of life was. Because up until this point, I hadn't really given any consideration to the foundation that I was building this life on. You know, I was just putting blocks together and putting a nice veneer of kind of morality and just being a good person on the front of it, but I didn't know what the foundation was. And so, through this time of going to the Summit, I really started to think about that, and came to realize, all right, I got to believe there's a God, because if there's not, then life just seems kind of meaningless and hopeless. So if there is, who is my God? Up until that point, he'd been pretty small. He was just kind of a bigger and better version of me. He sort of pointed out when I did things wrong and patted me on the back when I did things well. You know, it's like, hey, did a good job, you know, giving a little money to charity, or thanks for letting that person cut in front of you in traffic. And that was kind of who he was. But I realized over time that the God of the Bible is nothing like that. I mean, he created the universe. So why would the God of the universe really care if I was giving a little money to charity or being a good person? It's just kind of, it didn't add up for me. And so the more I thought about that, I realized every religion in the world, even my Americanized version of Christianity, tells you to do things, which worked great for a guy who wants to control stuff. Doing things is how I want to kind of earn my keep. And so I was realizing that I couldn't do enough to make a God like this happy. It just wasn't going to add up. And so reading the Bible and kind of get into it more, I came across a couple of verses I want to share. One was Romans 3:23. It says, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So it just meant I was on the same playing field as every single person. Being prideful and putting myself above people, that wasn't possible. I was the same as everybody else. It also said that in Isaiah 64:6, it says all of our works are like filthy rags. So it's kind of like me coming to God, putting my resume in front of him, and him looking at me and being like, this is a pile of garbage. it wasn't going to be enough for a perfect God to be pleased with me. And so, you know, that just wasn't, so me being good enough wasn't going to work. And then Romans 6:23 says, "For the wages of sin is death, but the free gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus our Lord." And what that told me was that, all right, I wasn't good enough. I was never going to be good enough. But if I continue this path of trying to do things on my own, it's not going to lead to good things. If I just accept this gift that God is giving me for no other reason than He loves me, then I know I can give up control of trying to build this life and just rest in kind of a freedom of knowing that I've got a God who loves me and is going to watch out for me. And that was absolutely transformational for who I was as a person, to come to understand that. And it's changed my outlook on life, of who I am and how I go forward doing things. I kind of liken it to, like I said, I got three boys, and I love my boys dearly. And I don't love my boys because they do things right, and I don't love my boys less because they're doing things wrong. I love my boys because they're my sons, and I love them because they're mine. And I started to view God in that relationship to me. He just loves me because I'm His. And that gave me so much comfort. And so, like I said, started giving up control to God and just trusting that, all right, if I follow His path for me, I'm going to be all right. So at the same time, while this is going on, my dad, who had that stroke, he lost the use of the left side of his body. So he's paralyzed on one half of his body. He was an orthopedic surgeon. He could no longer practice medicine. He could no longer be active. He was no longer kind of an anchor of our community that people knew for being a doctor. My dad, who I thought all that stuff would drive him away from wanting anything to do with God, became a Christian as well, because he had that same realization that it didn't matter what he did, it was never going to be good enough, and he could stop striving and trying to make things himself and could trust in God. And so I thought that was a miracle. But so for me, how life has changed, where I used to define success as wealth and having a lot of things, I now look at success as serving God faithfully every day. For me, when I used to struggle with the image and people's opinions of myself, I don't worry about that anymore because I know that God loves me for who I am. Where I used to put myself first, I am now a much more generous person. And I've actually changed my view on work, of doing everything nobody else wants to do and working to serve all of my coworkers by making things run as smoothly as possible so they can do their job excellently. And that's just kind of flipping on its head what I used to think of work. And then finally, when I used to struggle to be good enough, I now know I'm not good enough, but I don't have to be, because I've got a God who loves me just for who I am. And that is freeing. And so I kind of say it like this: I'm free to continue to struggle with the things that, you know, are wrong with me, but I don't have to struggle to be free. So anyway, kind of getting back to precision a little bit, we went to trial in 2013, and so there was no way to settle this thing, so we were going to trial. I don't know if any of you have ever been through a jury trial, prepared for this kind of stuff. It is ridiculous. The amount of, like, we had an entire floor of the Hotel DuPont rented by our law firm preparing for this thing. We had a war room where they were sitting down and preparing people for this stuff. It was amazing. So we came through it and we won, which is, I mean, it was a huge accomplishment. It also left us with a huge amount of debt. I mean, legal debt that was just, it's an enormous number, it's staggering. And really difficult to figure out, how are we going to get through this? Because for years, we weren't able to raise money, difficult to do deals, and we were just scraping along. So about this time, things started to happen where our technology started to get to a point where it was really robust. At the same time, the biotech market really started to get hot, and everybody started getting interested in biotech again. And particularly getting interested in genome editing, CAR T therapy, which is cancer therapy we're working in, and genetic engineering, gene therapy. And so all of these things started to come together at the same time. And again, I'm just realizing I have no control over these external things going on, but they're all coming together at the right time. Coming together at the right time to the point where we had to turn away people who wanted to invest in our company. Where it used to be we couldn't get anybody to even look at us, we now had to decide between what syndicate of people we wanted to take money from to invest in our company. So last year, as Ian had mentioned, we raised $25.65 million in our Series A as a 9-year-old company doing the Series A. That allowed us to more than double our facility space, which our facility is 2 blocks away from here. We went from 14 employees to now 36, and we're continuing to grow like crazy for the foreseeable future. In large part because, if anybody of you saw the news today, there's a press release that came out about Precision Biosciences where we just closed a deal with Baxalta to work in CAR-T, cancer immunotherapy. The upfront payment's $105 million. The bio bucks in the deals upwards of $1.6 billion, and we also have a deal to have 50-50 co-promote on any drugs that come out. And looking at that, I mean, it's just astonishing. Everybody in the office is kind of speechless and giddy right now. I mean, this is just, it's amazing. It took 10 years to get there, and we went through all of this stuff to get there, but it's amazing to look at. And I don't say all of that to say that, you know, just trust in God and all these good things will happen. I'm thankful for all those things being a blessing to us, and I get to continue to be at Precision Biosciences doing great things. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm looking at success as not, you know, God didn't send me here to work at a biotech company and get rich. God brought me here to bring me to himself so that he could love me as his son. And I view that as being success more than anything else now, so much more than I did 10 years ago. So when I'm that, you know, when I'm Lord Business walking around with that bottle of crazy glue trying to glue everything back together and control everything, I can take a step back, take a deep breath, and know that, all right, God is in control, I can trust him, I don't have to worry about it anymore. So yeah, that's my story. It's a little bit about Precision. It has been a wild ride. We've enjoyed it a lot, and we're very excited for what it's going to look like going forward. But thank you all for listening to me.